Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. This is the Saturday Show. My name is Jay Catch, typically joined by Michelle Bodkin, but she is out and about in Los Angeles getting ready for today's matchup with Utah and USC, the number 14 ranked Utes, the number 18 ranked Trojans. She is in LA. She's going to join us at the top of the 11 o'clock hour live from Los Angeles. So we'll check in with her. Just watching game day wrap up, and they just continue to kind of let things roll here, man. They're well past the top of the hour. It feels like, no, they're just kind of right on top of it. We're a little bit early, but Kirk Herbstreit helping out Coach Lee Corso, and wow. Christian Esparza, by the way, is producing for us today. Christian, Coach Herbstreit is going with, obviously, he picked the Buckeyes in this matchup between them and the Penn State, but he's got the Brutus Buckeyes, like he's got the jersey that Brutus wears too, along with the headgear.
He's a fan.
He is a fan. Nailing it. By the way, those of you wondering, they did make picks for Utah and USC. All but Kirk Herbstreit picking the Trojans to win that matchup between the Utes and the Cougars down in the Coliseum. Herbie believes that Utah can get it done on the road later on this evening. We're spending a lot of today talking about that game. We'll also talk BYU and Texas Tech as BYU tries to get back off the deck after getting absolutely demolished last week by the TCU Horned Frogs. They'll be matching up against Texas Tech. We got a fun day of football ahead of us. The bigger thing is we're looking at a big day of college football, honestly. We got on our TV here on ESPN. We got Arkansas taking on, I know it's Arkansas because I just saw, they're taking on Mississippi State. All right. Wow, that's a thrilling matchup to kick off the day of football on ESPN. I'll be flipping the channel here momentarily. A 3-3 team versus 2-5, but nonetheless, looking forward to that. We'll also talk a little bit about the Utah Jazz. They have wrapped up their preseason. The regular season opens up Wednesday night. Yes, folks, it is here. The NBA season is upon us. It feels like the NBA never really sleeps, but they are back officially with games upcoming. And like I said, we'll also check in with Michelle Bodkin at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. All right, Christian, because Michelle is not here, I'm going to lobby this at you. As we like to start each Saturday show, what's been the highlight of your week?
Oh, man, I'd go back to last Sunday. Okay. My parents live up in Manoway. It's a little mountain town in between Brigham City and
Logan.
Yeah, Mantua, you know. My parents live up there, really beautiful this time of year with the fall colors.
They are lucky to live there, by the way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. So my wife and I went up there. My parents have some side-by-sides, so we kind of went on a little family ride up into the mountain, and it was really nice to get up there and see all the colors and stuff.
It's been an incredible fall here along the Wasatch Front. The colors have kind of, they turned and they stayed turning.
And they're so vibrant.
Yes.
Like lots and lots of bright red. I think it might be because we had so much rain. I don't know. I'm no scientist.
We need to get some arborist or whatever they call themselves to break it down for us, no doubt. But yeah, it's been absolutely incredible. I've been up Alpine Loop, I've been over Guardsman Pass a couple different times just to see the colors, and you're right, it's been absolutely immaculate. Manoway is just like this little hidden gem, it feels like. Is that Sardine Canyon, technically, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so fun stuff there. Highlight of my week, honestly, would be just the fact that my son is home from the NICU. He's been home for a little while now. It's just fun to have him home. Both my other kids think he's the greatest thing, so it's just fun to have the whole family hanging around.
So. How old is your middle child?
My middle child's 5.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of a gap there, but they're 7 and 5, my older daughter and son, but they are very helpful.
And they're ready to to be big, big siblings.
Oh, yeah. They're very excited. Let's just put it that way. They constantly want to help with stuff. Maybe a little too helpful at times, but nonetheless, they do.
That's good.
Best.
At least they're excited about it.
Yeah, it does help in that regard. There's no doubt about that. So it's a fun time, and obviously we got a lot of stuff to break down on today's show. But let's start off by talking a little bit about Utah and USC. Now, this is a matchup over the past year 12 of the Pac-12 era here, actually year 13, I believe, of the Pac-12 era for Utah. That this series between the Utes and the Trojans has been a fun one, honestly. Some very notable games, some back and forth, a lot of, let's just put it this way, one-sided in some ways, rivalry talk. But Kyle Whittingham, I think, dispelled that this week when he talked about, I don't really consider it a rivalry, it's just been a really fun series. Been some crazy games. Last year, the two games that they did play in the regular season, obviously, and Dalton Kincaid and Cam Rising just single-handedly, it feels like, just absolutely dominating the Trojans, and then obviously the Pac-12 title game and the Caleb Williams hamstring game, as I like to refer to it. Some wild results. You can guarantee that you're going to have USC wanting some revenge. They want to end this era of the Pac-12 before they move to the Big Ten. Obviously, the Utes move to the Big 12. They want to end it with a victory, and we'll see how it shakes out today. But the bigger thing at hand is watching College Game Day this morning, and Christian, I don't know if you saw this as well. Obviously, Pete Thamel, the ESPN insider for college football, says that Bryson Barnes is going to start. I don't think that's surprising anybody at this point. But there's been a pivot this week to, could Cam Rising medically retro? Could he get a medical hardship and come back for next year? Okay, I get the thought process. Let me say that. But I'll echo something that PK says all the time. This dude's 24. He's going to be 25 next year. If he has any hopes of going and playing professional football, why are you running back here? Now, I know that he's made a significant amount of NIL money. But my question is, even if he's not necessarily a top-round NFL quarterback, what are you doing waiting around for a whole nother year in college football? Your thought.
Yeah, I think you look at Stetson Bennett. Obviously, he was really old, and he was just drafted.
He played like 8 years.
He's not with the Rams right now. I believe they were the ones that picked him up. He had some off-the-field stuff going on. But that's a similar age. I think he was late 24, maybe 25 when he was drafted.
Correct.
But you're right. That is something that came up kind of in the last week, was the medical redshirt thing. Mm-hmm. And I was at Whittingham's press conference on Monday, and he kind of explained you can't play at all in the season if you want to medically
correct
redshirt.
Yeah, you have to miss the entire year.
Right.
Yeah,
so, of course, that is bad news for Utes fans. I think right now Cam Rising, if he was wanting to get drafted, he'd probably be looking at about maybe a sixth-round pick, especially with this injury history. That's pretty scary. And then, yeah, if he were to play a couple games this year and then enter the draft, there is a chance that teams don't want that. Maybe he's thinking that if he wants any chance of getting drafted after this injury, he needs to play a full slate of games.
And maybe that is the case. The only thing that I have concern of is, how do I say this? Are they going to short circuit themselves in the recruiting process if he comes back for another year? And what I mean by that is, you have a number of young quarterbacks on this roster, most notably Brandon Rose, Nate Johnson. The thing is, if you have him come back for another year, are you short circuiting their potential as players? And are they going to be content to stand by and wait for a whole nother season while they potentially burn another year of eligibility just for the chance to play for Utah? That's the concern you got to have in the transfer portal, in the transfer portal era here, if you're Utah, if you weigh this back and forth. Now, if it works out, Cam Rising is one of the top 10 most dynamic football players in college football. We have all seen that. I don't care what fan of what school you are. When you watch him play, he is just incredible, and he has an ability to keep Utah in any game and really change the game with his ability out there when he's healthy. I just wonder if the back and forth on this, if Utah's thinking, you know what, maybe we do want him to move on, so therefore we can move on from this. But at the same time, Kyle Whittingham and Utah have enjoyed a lot of success with that guy leading them to back-to-back Rose Bowls.
Yeah, and that's kind of Whittingham's personality, it feels like. Like, if Cam is willing to come back and do it, it feels like Coach Whittingham is going to be like, all right,
yeah,
let's do it. But that's a good point that you bring up, because we're kind of seeing that this year, is they're kind of getting bit in the butt. According to Whittingham, they didn't even bother looking at quarterbacks in the transfer portal because they were so confident that Cam Rising would be back this year. And you kept hearing them say week one was a maybe.
He's on track. He's going to come down to the wire. Trust me, I was at many of those media sessions throughout the offseason. Yes.
So because of that, they didn't even bother to think about bringing in other quarterbacks. And so, like I said, we're seeing that this year. Hopefully we don't have to go through a whole another year of that, because there are other quarterbacks that could be beneficial to this Utah program.
Yes.
But if there's any possibility that Cam Rising is going to be back, then they're not even going to bat an eye. towards other quarterbacks, other options.
Well, and see, that's the interesting part about it is, yes, if he is going to be full go, and Dr. Neil Atrosh, who did the surgery, has said that he expects Cam Rising to be 100% healthy. Now, Cam did take to the airwaves locally and explained that it was not just a simple ACL tear. He tore the meniscus, he also MCL, and there was one other ligament tendon in there, MPFF, something. I'm not a doctor. I do radio, folks. But he had a significant amount of damage. And Dr. Neil Atrosh said that the typical timeline for the amount of damage that he sustained in that knee is 10 to 12 months. Okay. He suffered that on January 2nd, was in the Rose Bowl, was this past year. He has that surgery sometime in January. Well, that put him at the eight-month mark, when the season started. The 10-month mark is right about now. So there's just... It feels like it's just in many ways kind of a headache in so many different ways, because I've seen on social media, trust me, and I spend way too much on social media, I freely admit this, but there have been a number of Utah fans saying that Utah should have gone out and essentially brought in a transfer and said, okay, if he doesn't play, you're the guy. But they also need to say that this transfer needs to have an ability to redshirt. Great. But here's the thing. You go in the transfer portal. We all know this because you want to play football. You want to play right away. You are unhappy sitting and riding the pine where you're currently at. That's the tough part in the back and forth of all this is I get the thought process. I get why you would want to do that. But it's a pretty hard sell, honestly, I feel like. This is revisionist history. This is looking back at something months and months and months ago, but also looking forward in a way, to your point, Christian, that if this does go down, he does pursue that medical hardship waiver. He does come back next year. Okay, does Brandon Rose, Nate Johnson, do they want to stick around? Are they going to be content to hang around? Bryson Barnes, I think he may have another year of eligibility, if I recall correctly. I'm not 100% certain on that. I could see a thinning out of the quarterback room for Utah, but who are you going to be able to convince to come in if you want to pursue a transfer with the same thought process as what some thought should have happened this past offseason?
Especially because these are like 19, 20-year-old kids. Yes. You know, I want it now. Like,
yeah, they want to play.
And it's, I mean, they deserve it, yes. Especially if they're a top quarterback, big-name quarterback. Then, yeah, no doubt they should be able to pursue opportunities where they can – start. Nobody wants to transfer to a program and be the plan B.
Correct. You know? Yes.
So that really is a difficult situation.
Yeah, and it there's not a perfect answer for any of this. Let me be very frank about this. And it's kind of cast like this shadow over this season for Utah. And let's also acknowledge this with regards to the season for Utah. The front half of the schedule was the relatively light part of the schedule. Now, I say that relatively light because it's college football. There are crazy things that happen in every single game. But this back half, especially kicking off today, you play USC today and you come home next week and host Oregon. That's a very tough back-to-back. You still have Washington looming out there, who I'm with PK on this. In the preseason, I kind of tabbed Washington as my team to beat in the Pac-12, and so far they've lived up to the hype. Fantastic game a week ago against Oregon, went down to the wire. Now, Dan Lanning made some questionable decisions as that game played out, but nonetheless, Washington looks like they're in the catbird seat with regards to how things look right now. But Utah has got a very, very tough slate of games ahead of them. They're going to have to continue to win football games the way they have won them early on this season. I think the Cal game may be the exception to this. I'm expecting games for Utah, so long as Cam Rising sits out. If Utah wants to win football games, they're going to have to win them in the fashion that they won against UCLA. Get just enough on offense, get a defensive score, and have your defense just lock teams down. The question is, this defense looks very much the part of being capable of doing that, but you, starting today, are going up against the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. Next week, you have Bo Nix and that vaunted Oregon Ducks defense. A couple weeks beyond that, down the road, you have the Washington Huskies and Michael Penix. There's a lot better offenses on the slate here. Can you generate enough offense to go out there and win football games if you're Utah? Is Sione Vaki, like this superhuman, the next coming of Eric Weddle, that's going to lead you to victory? You better hope so, because the way it looks right now, you need to generate more offense, and you also got to hope that defense continues to hold up.
Yeah, and the other thing that was really helpful last week against Cal, they hit a lot of chunk plays.
They did. And that
big
is,
explosive yes. plays. But obviously we know with this offense that they have, that's not something that we can count on.
It gets bogged down at times, Joe.
Obviously, if it happens, that's great. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But Sione Vaki's not going to take a 72-yard Wildcat score to the house every game. And
against USC's defense, he very well may.
Yeah, he very
USC's
well could
is,
be, right.
I, by the way, I don't get USC and what they're trying to do on defense. It looks like they're just like, ole! Like, it's just, they don't want to tackle. They're soft. We had Matt Zemek on Unrivaled earlier this week, and he called USC soft, and I think he nailed it. They are soft. Yeah. Anyways, continue.
So, well, that's just, and to your point, like, against UCLA, they barely, you know, 14 points, and one of those was a defensive score.
Yeah, you needed that pick six
and
to start
so
the game.
We're going to need that sort of production if that's what they want to, if that's, if they want to pull wins out. Mm-hmm. But the other thing, too, is their defense can't sustain any more injuries. And injuries have been a huge problem for this Utes team. Obviously, we spent a ton of time talking about Cam Rising, but they've had injuries all over the defense as well.
Mm-hmm. And they're also going to miss Cole Bishop for the first half today because
targeting.
Yep.
Right. So they already are missing so many players on defense that it feels like they are almost to the breaking point, that if they miss any more of their big defensive names – going against USC, going against Oregon, going against Washington, mm-hmm. that's not good. So they're hoping they can stay healthy on defense and get production from that side and squeak out victories.
Now, the big question, obviously, is how are you going to generate offense? Well, offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig has to answer that question, and he addressed the media earlier this week, and it was almost kind of in a way fortuitous that this was the week he spoke. For those of you who don't know, Utah has like a rotation on their assistant coaches on when they do speak. It's like, I think they speak once or it's about twice a season, just how they rotate through them. Well, Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator, spoke to the media earlier this week, and I thought it had some very interesting thoughts on how Sione Vaki has developed, obviously, into his role, kind of playing as you'll hear him talk about the Eric Weddle / Matt Asiata role, where he's a dual threat guy, both offensively and defensively. But there's also some thoughts he says about the quarterback's position. So let's cue that up, Christian. Let's let everybody hear a little bit more from offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig about what exactly Utah plans to do on offense.
From your standpoint, what does Bryson have to do to continue to develop?
He's got to protect the football. He's got to manage the offense and score more touchdowns in the red zone.
Was Saturday a step forward for him? It just seemed like he was more comfortable than he'd been previously.
I believe it was a step forward from the Baylor game. I guess he came in at Oregon State, was very productive and moved the football team, but he did look very comfortable. He's a very confident young man. Unbelievable preparation skills and confidence in what he's doing, and I think that showed up on Saturday.
How much did the extra week, do you think, help him in preparation for Saturday?
I think it was big. He was out for a couple days with the injury sustained before the bye week, but again, he works very hard in everything he's doing, and I think that hard work has paid off for him.
We saw Sione run it once at Oregon State. What was behind the decision to kind of, other than just running back room depth, to kind of break him out?
That would be the biggest reason, and obviously adds a real dynamic to the offense that's we've lacked. I think he's a great counterpunch. JJ's such a powerful runner, very good inside runner. But the decisiveness and explosiveness of Sione was on display on Saturday, and we look to build on that package moving forward.
Kyle indicated on Saturday that Sione's workload would expand. Do you anticipate that happening going into Saturday?
That's what Coach Witt says. That's what we're doing. But that guy's a dynamic football player. He needs the ball in his hand.
He was absolutely gassed at times during that game. Does he get the appreciation from his teammates that he deserves for something like that?
Yes, he does. Yep. It's a big task being a two-way player, but he's the man for the job. And I look, again, until Coach Witt says don't give him the ball anymore, we're going to keep giving him the ball.
How does he compare to guys you've coached over the years and you've used in two ways? You used Weddle years ago. You used Asiata in a bit, but also in other places. Have you had a guy as dynamic as him play both ways?
No, I think the Eric Weddle comparison is very fair and accurate, and really, those have been the two primary defenders that I've used in my career.
Okay.
And so again, I look to Eric, had a lot of success for us. Would have been a 1,500 yard rusher easily had he been a full time offensive player, but obviously things worked out well for him. So
how nice a confidence boost was Saturday for Bryson? He just seemed ear to ear smiles after the game.
Yeah, he did so many good things, so many positives. Obviously missed one. There was one uncatchable throw in the ball game that hurts. He'll grow and develop from that. Did a great job scrambling, converted two third downs, running the football when things broke down on the perimeter. And I just look for that to continue to grow and for Hibbs' development to continue through the course of the season.
Seems like when Mimir is healthy, he's such a big play type player. How do you go about getting him a little more involved?
He's got to be healthy.
What's the biggest issue for the offense right now moving forward?
We need to get everybody back. We need to remain healthy. We got to generate more explosive plays. It's hard to grind it out now like we've been doing. And the passing game's got to be much more productive.
In your view, how much does confidence really change the game for the offense?
Considerably.
In terms of passing game, the tight ends have been kind of MIA up to this point. What do you think has caused that?
I think the strength in the passing game is going to be with the perimeter players. I do believe that Landon King has shown some growth in the system, learning the ropes of the Utah offense and how we do things. I look for that to continue. Miki has a role, has been productive in his role, but I think right now the featured element in the passing game will be the perimeter players.
Offensive line-wise, what were you able to see Saturday versus maybe the prior weeks?
Physicality.
If Sione's role is going to expand in terms of wildcat and direct snaps and just having the ball in his hand, how much does that affect what Nate can do on the field? Because he does a lot of the same things.
Yeah, it's hard to jockey three guys in and out of that role. So I'm not saying that the Nate package will disappear, but it will be minimal as long as Sione Vaki is available to us. Thank you very much.
There you go, Andy Ludwig. And yeah, I don't blame him one bit for saying, yeah, we're going to run Sione Vaki until Kyle Whittingham says, yeah, no more. He's dynamic. There's no doubt about it. He was phenomenal and integral to them getting a win over Cal. And it'll be interesting to see how far he really can carry them. Because by the way, I also add this. Did you guys, I don't know if you guys picked up on this, did you see Andy Ludwig say that Eric Weddle could have been like a 1,000-yard rusher had he been a full-time offensive player? And he said, it seemed to have worked out for him pretty well, though.
Yeah, that's, and the thing that's hard with Sione Vaki is part of the reason, I mean, he's a tremendous athlete, don't get me wrong. He had a great game, but maybe part of the reason he did so good is because it was very unexpected.
Yeah.
Now that this came out, they've been talking about it all week, they've mentioned they want to continue to have him involved a little bit on offense. Now teams know a little bit to prepare for that. Yeah. So that's something that I'm interested in watching is, How does USC, obviously you mentioned earlier they've been struggling with tackling, their defense has been giving up big plays, but how does USC kind of prepare now that they know that Sione Vaki is going to have this role?
Well, and that's the thing about it. Kyle Whittingham, I mean, you were at that press conference. He says that they're 5-6 deep. They feel like it's safety to absorb him maybe spending more time on offense. I'm just looking at this, okay, this is a USC defense. I already said they're Charmin soft. They're just not. They're not what they need to be. I'm convinced that Lincoln Riley thinks defense is optional. I don't know what else to say at this point. But the bigger question is, are they going to be able to rein in this Utah running game? Because if they do that, and that's what if I was defending Utah right now, I'd say we're stacking the box. Nobody from Utah is running on us, and we're going to put it on whoever they put at quarterback, Bryson Barnes, Nate Johnson, whoever it is at quarterback, they're beating us with their arm. That's what I would bet on if I was defending Utah right now.
Yeah, 100%. And especially with a quarterback like Bryson Barnes, who's kind of been up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Last week he had one of the better games that he's had as a starter. But even still, it wasn't anything to write home about. And you go against a really good program like USC, and who knows if that's going to be enough to win. So, yeah, if USC is going to stack the box, Utah just has to hope that they can be more physical, be the more physical team. And I have every reason to believe that they can do that.
Well, and I'm with you on that. Utah's proven that. Kyle Whittingham, you don't last as long a head coach and have a program of his that doesn't out-physical people. That's been one of their calling cards, if not their chief calling card, during his run at Utah. And we'll see. USC is considered to be one of those pretty boy teams that are front runners, and they fold like a deck chair if you get them early. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. But, man, this is such an intriguing matchup today because USC has the offense on paper that can make life very difficult for Utah. But going to your point, and I think everybody else is thinking this, Utah has got this physical, rugged nature to them that USC seemingly wants no part of. They don't want to get into the rock fight that Utah's willing to get into, and they're going to have to.
Yeah, it's two very dramatically different style of offenses. Obviously, USC, they just want to throw the ball. They want to let Caleb Williams shine, let all the receivers make big plays. On the other hand, you have Utah, kind of old school, run the ball down your throat.
Yes.
Set up the play action and maybe get big plays off the play action shots there. So it's really going to come down to who controls the style of game that's played. Is it going to be a very physical game, one in the trenches, or is it going to be kind of this shootout?
Yeah.
And we'll see.
Yeah, it will be interesting. All right, coming up on the other side, we will talk a little BYU football. They got absolutely, talking about teams that got demolished last week, the BYU Cougars did, 44-11 to TCU. Looking to bounce back this week as they have their homecoming game against the Texas Tech Red Raiders. We'll break into that game coming up next, coming up at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Michelle Bodkin, obviously co-host on this program and Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com. She will join us live from Los Angeles. So more to come right here on the Saturday Show on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Wow, we just saw a very successful tush push in the Arkansas-Mississippi State game. Now, just put it this way, the defense was not set, and KJ Jefferson is an absolute beast of a human being at quarterback, but that went for like 5 yards. Wow.
What are your thoughts on that, the tush push?
Well, okay, let me just say this. I get why people want it banned because it looks like rugby. Like, and that's this sport evolved out of rugby and some other elements and whatnot. I get it's brute force. It's what it is. It's everybody packed in tight. It's back to the eras of the 1900s with regards to football. But here's the thing: if everybody could run it successfully, Christian, they would.
Yes.
And we've seen a number of teams fail miserably.
And that's the part that is funny to me, is everybody's like, oh, it's so stupid that it's, you know, the Eagles run it and they always get it. But it's like, yeah, you look at other teams that try to do it, and most other teams kind of struggle.
Yeah, I mean, and now let me just run it. Welcome back to the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Christian Esparza, Jay Catch. Hope you all are doing well. But to your point, one thing about Jalen Hurts is I don't think people realize this. He is an absolute freak in the weight room. Like, we talk about Taysom Hill, obviously, because his connection to the state of Utah and BYU and whatnot. Taysom Hill is a guy, and I have it on very good authority, that as a quarterback at BYU, he was such a physical freak. He was lifting with the offensive linemen. That was his strength group he ran with, because other quarterbacks couldn't lift the weight and squat what he could. Jalen Hurts is of a similar ilk, and maybe even more so.
Like, and it seems like Jalen Hurts is smaller than Taysom Hill. Like, Taysom Hill is pretty big for a quarterback.
Yeah, Taysom Hill looks like just a Greek god out there.
Yeah, you look at Jalen Hurts and you wouldn't think that he can squat 600 pounds, but here he is.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is it's fun to watch what Jalen Hurts does, because he's got such a powerful lower body that he just drives forward. And he has the advantage of having one of the best offensive lines in the NFL in front of him driving forward, led by Jason Kelce. The brother of the boyfriend of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
You got it? Okay.
He's just now relevant, yeah. No, and that's a big factor, too. A lot of people don't realize that the Eagles have the best offensive line. They don't have, like, a weak spot at all.
No, they're very good. So, anyways, yeah, I get why people want it banned, but if it worked for everybody, nobody would be wanting it banned. Let's just put it that way. So, all right, anyways. We'll talk a little more NFL as the show progresses, obviously. A big weekend ahead, by the way, in the NFL. Sorry about your Broncos, by the way, Christian.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's going to take a minute for them to get back to...
It's going to take a long minute. It's, you know, same old here in Broncos country.
We'll see. All right, let's talk a little BYU. Now, the Cougars, 44-11 last week was... frankly, not what I was expecting. I don't think anybody expected that from BYU. Coming off a bye week, they talked about the fact that they kind of got back to the basics. Aaron Roderick, who we'll hear from here in just a minute, he talked about the fact that they went back to essentially kind of training like they had in training camp during the bye week. Well, it all went for naught because they got absolutely pulverized by the TCU Horned Frogs. The final score, 44-11. It was that bad, if not worse. They allowed a first-time starting quarterback in Josh Hoover to go over 400 yards passing in that game. I'm interested to see how Hoover does as kind of an encore to that performance. He's got a really tough matchup. He's the starting quarterback again today for TCU as they take on Kansas State, who, by the way, took care of Texas Tech, who was BYU's opponent last week. But I'm looking at this today as Texas Tech comes to BYU, is that BYU has a big opportunity in today's game to prove that was an exception. That was an aberration. That was just a kind of a one-off there. And they're going to bounce back today. Now, I had some people on my podcast. Those of you who don't know, I host a podcast called Locked On Cougars. It's daily coverage of BYU athletics, BYU football in particular. I had a couple of people point out on that podcast, and I'll bring it here, is that, Christian, BYU is 0 for the month of October since 2021. They lost all four games a year ago. They're 0-1 in this October, and today feels like the linchpin if they want to get off the deck and avoid having to go into 2024 without a win in the month of October, because I don't expect them to win at Texas next week. Today's the day to get off the schneid there.
Let's hope so, because coming out of a bye week and looking the way that they did last week, it's just baffling.
Baffling, downright awful, like horrendous. Use any adjective or pejorative that you want. It was not good enough from BYU. They admitted as much. Connor Pay, who joins Unrivaled each week, he also joins my podcast. He used the word, we were embarrassed. We were embarrassing in our performance. And I think that sentiment has kind of reverberated throughout the BYU football program this week. I was down there at practice both Tuesday and Wednesday in their media sessions, also the press conference on Monday that they do via Zoom. You can kind of tell that they kind of their tail tucked between their legs, and they just like, man, we sucked last week. We got to get back off the deck here.
So do you think they're going to respond positively or negatively from that?
I'm expecting them to respond positively, because if they respond negatively, guess what? They're going to go 0 for the month of October here. And by the way, they may go 0 for the rest of the season if they have that same type of performance.
Exactly. So this feels like kind of a really big game right here.
I don't want to use the term must win, but it's about as close as you get, I feel like, to, in some ways, and I don't want to say resurrecting the season, but like reigniting is probably the better term to use.
And that's a really good way to put it, because there are kind of two different paths that they could go. They could pick up the win today, get back on track. Obviously, they've still got a couple tough games ahead on the schedule.
Every game's tough the rest of the season, it feels like.
Getting the win today, at least, will bring the feeling back into the building of, oh yeah, we've got this, we can be a good program in this new conference. But on the other hand, if they lose, then it's like, yeah, there is a very real possibility that they don't win again for the rest of the season. If they lose today, run away with their tail tucked between their legs. So I'm very, very interested to see in what BYU looks like today.
Well, and the other thing about this is a BYU football program that they've been excited to be part of the Big 12, and the fan base is jacked. Trust me, the reaction to being a part of the Big 12 has been awesome. But there was something that I kind of noticed this week, and I don't remember who pointed it out to me, and I might have been a listener, but here's the thing. BYU fans, and I mean this in the kindest way possible, because trust me, I include myself in this conversation, as well as most of us in the sports media world. For the past 12 seasons for BYU, as an independent, when they picked up their first win of the season, it was like, okay, depending on who they lost to, you're like, okay, if they can win out here, they may be able to change the trajectory of how people perceive this season. They may be able to change and get into a bigger bowl game. The second loss, though, everybody's off the ship. It's like, okay, get to 6 wins and go to the they played in the Independence Bowl in Shreveport. They played in the Hawaii Bowl. Like, you know your bowl game before the season. It's BYU's an independent. It was just part of the deal. I think we've been too conditioned over the past decade plus for BYU that when they pick up their second loss, they almost check out on BYU. And I'm including myself in this conversation. So I'm not casting this all upon BYU fans, but the concern you have to have is you got to realize here, if you're BYU, that you still have a role to play in this. You're now part of a conference. Literally every game you play this season matters. There were too many times in Independence when you got into the back half of October, especially the month of November, that you were playing dogs, and it was like, what does this game really mean outside of the fact we're playing football?
Especially you take out last week's game against TCU, and you have, so far in the season, it's looked like BYU can hang.
They have
in this
hung,
conference.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not up there towards the top of the Big 12, but
nobody expected them to be.
As far as the middle of the Big 12, which is probably higher than a lot of people expected BYU to be, they look like they could be one of those middle teams. And so, yeah, it's very interesting to see kind of how they respond today.
Sure, and there is a big opportunity staring BYU in the face in this game, more so than most it feels like, because the simple fact of the matter is Texas Tech, you want to talk about injuries, they have dealt with numerous injuries to their quarterback position. Tyler Shuck, their starting quarterback coming into the year, broke the fibula or tibia, I don't remember which bone he broke in his foot, and he's out 6 to 8 weeks, they said, and he's like 3 weeks removed from that, so he's not playing tonight, obviously. Baron Morton, their backup quarterback, he has been injured most of the season, has been kind of being able to play on game days, but he is a game-time decision at best today, according to Joey McGuire. I'm not expecting him to play. So that means that Jake Armstrong, a true freshman quarterback from Texas, is supposed to make his first career start for for Texas Tech against BYU. And I know the BYU fans are, well, a backup quarterback killed us last week. Why can't this kid do it? I think that BYU had, in a way, a wake-up call on defense in particular last week. They may have taken that Josh Hoover kid a little too lightly because BYU came into the game. If you watch that, I watch the game back. I do it every BYU game. I rewatch it. BYU came in with the thought, they are not running the football on us. We're going to put the game on the arm of this quarterback. And to Josh Hoover's credit, he carved BYU. Slice and dice, and he just made life miserable for BYU, and they were unable to get anything going against him. Today's a different story, it feels like. I think the defense learned something, and Jay Hill said it during his media session earlier this week. He said, we need to go out there, I don't care who it is at quarterback, and realize any one of these quarterbacks is capable of cutting us up.
Yeah, I think Jay Hill is excited to kind of prove it this week. Obviously, he's the new defensive coordinator this season. There were a lot of big expectations for him and the defense. And so, yeah, last week was kind of an embarrassing week for that defense. Mm-hmm. Now Jay Hill has this whole week to kind of sit here and prepare for a backup quarterback making his first start. And it's like, yeah, as a defensive coordinator, he should be licking his chops thinking, how can I get this defense back on track?
Correct.
And make life hard for this young quarterback?
And that's going to be the key. And the other thing about this is BYU's playing at home. They play so much better. Obviously, every team plays better when you're the friendly confines. Lavelle Edwards Stadium, close to, if not going to be a sellout tonight. 63,000-plus fans will be in the stands, and I'm expecting it to be a madhouse. But I like I said, I think – and I meant to play some Aaron Roderick sound, but I'm just going to forego it at this point – is that – I think we've been too conditioned for too long with BYU that when they got the first and second loss of the season, it's like, okay, great, whatever. No, this is a very, very difficult schedule, if not the most difficult schedule BYU's ever played in their football history. But the nice part is every single one of the games has stakes on it. And to your point earlier, Christian, is if BYU wins this game today, folks, they're 5-2. Winning football programs win games no matter how they come. And to your point also is in the first five games of the year, they had hung tough with everybody. They were 4-1 going into that bye week. The opportunity today is to prove, okay, yes, the TCU game, it was a clunker. It sucked. But we got to go out there and show that, no, that's the exception. This is who we actually are. And the other thing about this is, in many ways, a lot of us, yours truly included, before the season, thought that a 6-6 record for BYU would be a pretty good debut. Get to a bowl game, build from there. None of us expected BYU to be among the elite of the Big 12. That was that. If that's what you expected, welcome back to reality. Let's just put it that way. But the other thing about this is you get to five wins, you're on the doorstep of getting the bowl eligibility. You got to pick off one more, whether that's at West Virginia, home to Iowa State. You upset Texas on the road. You have Oklahoma come in here, and you get them in your regular season finale. Not regular season finale, your home finale, and then your regular season finale Thanksgiving weekend against Oklahoma State. You've only got to get one of those to get to bowl eligibility. And at that point, in many ways, sitting at 5-2, the final five games of the year feel like BYU's playing a little bit with house money.
Yeah, that feels very, very attainable if they can get that fifth win today. Mm-hmm. One more win down that stretch seems, like you said, house money. There we go.
And we'll see. Like I'm interested, like I said, I'm just very interested to see how BYU battles back from this. Because if they go out and lay another egg and they perform like they did against TCU, yeah, I would, at that point, I'd be hitting all kinds of panic bells and red alerts saying, okay, they may have won their first four games of the year, and they may end up 4-8. Because that type of performance against TCU is not going to win football games, period.
What do you think the offense needs to do today to step up? Because, I mean, Slovis had one of his worst games.
No, it's his worst game of the season.
Under 50% completion,
it was
right?
Brutal. Yeah. Yes.
So how can they turn things around there?
try and get anything out of the run game you possibly can. Connor Pay has pointed this out on Unrivaled, also my podcast. If you take out the sacks against TCU, BYU actually ran for 100-plus yards in that game against TCU. And by the way, half of that game, BYU, more than half of that game, they were playing catch-up. They were throwing the ball down the field. I actually saw better run blocking in many respects against TCU than I have seen in a minute from BYU on this offensive line. Was it perfect? By no means was it perfect. But it was an improved run blocking, and also for the running backs in particular, LJ Martin and Miles Davis notably, they made better reads. So the running game made some strides despite the brutal setback against TCU. So hopefully you can come into this game and say, okay, we're on home turf. Let's go out there and play the game on our terms. That's one thing the BYU this season, far too often, even with all the games that they have won, have played games on the terms of their opponent. Think of the Cincinnati game, for example. Cincinnati came out and for 29 minutes of that first half, controlled every single aspect of that game. And in many respects, the entire game, they controlled. Rushing yards, passing yards, time of possession, all of that went very skewed in the favor of the Bearcats. That final drive of the first half, 32 seconds, if I recall correctly, for BYU, they go down and score that touchdown, re-injected some life into BYU, and they actually became super efficient. Christian, I don't know if you know this, and I tracked this. I was watching that game. In their scoring drives, outside of the pick six for BYU in that game against Cincinnati, that would kept them in the game early in it. Do you know how many minutes of game time it took BYU to score all their touchdowns in that game?
Was it a lot?
No.
Really?
7 minutes and 22 seconds, if I recall correctly.
For each drive?
All drives combined.
Okay.
Like BYU became super, super efficient, moved down the ball, moved down the field, and scored touchdowns. That's what helped win that game for them. I'd like them in this game against Texas Tech. You have a true freshman quarterback going up against you. And by the way, I got to give credit. The Big 12 across the board has got some elite running backs in it this year. Well, the best one in the running back department right now in the Big 12 resides at Texas Tech. And I'm expecting the Red Raiders to come in and say, okay, we're running down BYU's throat. Load the box. Once again, put the game on the arm of that young quarterback. And then on offense for BYU, try and establish the running game early, get that set, and try and play, like I said, dictate the terms of how this game is going to be played. Do not let Texas Tech say this is how it's going to operate. You go out there and say, no, you're here in Provo, literally for the first time ever, by the way. Texas Tech is 5-0 versus Utah-based teams. They're 2-0 versus the Utes, 2-0 versus the Aggies, 1-0 against BYU, but all five of those games were played in Lubbock. Do you know the last time BYU and Texas Tech played, Christian?
Was it a while ago?
Oh, it's been 83 years.
Oh, my goodness.
1940 was the only time these two teams have ever played. It was a 21-20 ball game in Lubbock, Texas.
Maybe we'll see that same score today if both of these teams are going to be grinding it out on the
ground. I'll spoil it right now. I picked BYU 23, Texas Tech 20.
There you go.
So we'll see what happens. I'm very interested to see where things go because this is a big, big opportunity for BYU to prove who they are really as a football program. Are you the team that played against TCU? Are you that team, as we kind of pointed out in this segment, are you that team that has hung tough all season long, grinded out four and two on the season? You've ground out four wins against your toughest schedule ever. Can you go out and get your fifth tonight? That's going to be the big question mark facing the Cougars. All right, coming up here in just a minute, we're going to get to technical fouls, talk about some of the things that happened in the sports world this week that weren't so good. And we'll talk about all that coming up next right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you all are doing well on this Saturday morning. As you heard, it is time now for technical fouls, where we talk about people behaving poorly in the sports world. And Christian, I'm going to give you first dibs this week. What do you got?
I'm not going to go a specific person.
Okay.
I will go a team as a whole. I'm just going to go with the New Orleans Saints.
All right.
We talked about it earlier. I'm a Broncos fan. It's hard to make fun of other teams as a Broncos fan, but the Saints just looked so bad on Thursday night. It was hard to watch. They were down at one point 24-9, and that was with having two turnovers, making big plays on special teams, on defense. But their offense just struggled to move the ball, and it was hard to watch. Derek Carr was getting frustrated at his receivers. He was getting frustrated at the offensive coordinator. I don't know whose fault it is, but the Saints were an absolute mess on Thursday night. Credit to them. They came back, made it a one-score game.
They did.
Almost tied it to go into overtime. They dropped a touchdown there at the end, but the Saints are in trouble. Not to mention, and that's even, you know, before bringing up the fact that they're $87 million over the cap.
The salary cap is illusion, folks.
Yes. And the Saints have kind of kicked the can down the road the last few years. They've restructured contracts and pushed money down the line, I think this is the offseason where it's all going to catch up to them and we're going to see big changes in New Orleans.
I keep thinking that with them, but for like I said, that the salary cap is like this illusion. They keep to maneuver it. I'm like, how in the world? But you know what? That's why they pay these people lots of money. These salary
cap
specialists.
It all comes back to haunt you.
Yeah.
Or so I hear.
I've
yet to see it happen.
We'll see.
Maybe it happens with the Saints because you're right. They have been so good at manipulating that.
Oh yeah.
In recent years.
It's been nuts. There's no doubt about that. By the way, technical foul to Michigan. According to reports out there, they had a low level employee. 10 games of future opponents, as well as possible college football playoff opponents, to gather information on signs used to call plays on offense and defense. There is some thought out there that the one person that's kind of involved with it in particular kind of like bragged about doing this on LinkedIn, of all places.
Was he wearing his gear? That would be so funny.
Hi, I'm wearing maize and blue, and I got these binoculars here.
Got a notepad.
Don't mind me, fan sitting next to me while I stare intently at your offensive and defensive coaching staff.
The big M on the hat.
I'm just
a fan. Trust me.
I don't get it. And Jim Harbaugh has obviously disavowed all of this tonight. Any knowledge or involvement in plotting to steal opponents' play calling signals by sending representatives to their games, said he would fully cooperate with an NCAA investigation into allegations against his program. Well, here we know. Here's the thing. We do know that Jim Harbaugh does not like to cooperate with NCAA investigations. So
how would you not know if one of your assistants is gone another game? That's all I have to say.
It seems far too simplistic to say that you had no knowledge of this. I'm just saying, but crazy stuff at the same time. All right, a couple other things real quick. Dateline, St. Louis, Missouri. Quote, a St. Louis youth football program had the rest of its season canceled after a player's parent allegedly shot the coach multiple times for not putting his son as a starter for the team, according to city and police statements, unquote.
Oh, my goodness. Is the coach okay?
Let's see. Authorities responded to the scene on October 10th and found the coach, who had sustained, quote, serious physical injury from the gunshots, according to the probable cause statement. The coach was taken to the hospital for treatment, told officers a parent whose son plays on the team was upset with him for not starting his son. The parent approached the coach and eventually shot him multiple times while he was unarmed.
St. Louis, man.
Okay, folks. Let's take it easy there. Let's see. Shaquille Lattimore, I guess, is the coach. He coaches the Bad Boys team, told CNN affiliate KSDK he was shot four times and grazed just once. I saw bullet fragments in my body. I can still feel it. But by the grace of God, man, I am blessed and I am still here, he told the news station. So let's not, shoot people.
I wonder if that's like a 7-year-old team or like a 14-year-old team.
It doesn't say, and that's one thing I am interested on this. Also, by the way, also this Monday Night Football. This is from San Antonio. A Monday Night Football viewing party turned violent for two San Antonio residents who allegedly ended up getting into an altercation over the noise of said party. The disagreement led to a stabbing between the two men, and both have been transported to local hospitals in stable condition. Folks, it's a football game.
That's been a big issue this year.
We've seen a lot of fights in the stands.
I don't know if it's because there are more fights happening than normal or if people are just happening to catch them on camera.
I think it's more the latter with the rise of smartphones.
Yeah, and it seems like every week you go on Twitter on an NFL Sunday and there's all these videos of these big fights happening in the stands. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Watching the Dallas Cowboys can lead to some pretty rambunctious responses. This comes from the story. And those loud hoops and hollers may have led to a dispute between the two men in their 50s on the west side of San Antonio Monday night, October 16th. The two men, presumably neighbors, got into a fight where knives were reportedly drawn during the altercation, and the two men began stabbing each other multiple times. Okay, folks. Like I said, it's a football game. Let's take it easy out there. And then one final one here. I know that soccer doesn't necessarily resonate, but it involves the NFL. Did you see this earlier this week that Stan Kroenke and SoFi Stadium are like out in terms of potentially hosting any games and was potentially in the running to host the World Cup final in 2026 simply because when they built SoFi Stadium, they didn't build it big enough to host a soccer match. And Stan Kroenke, their owner, who owns multiple soccer franchises, refuses to have it remodeled to fit soccer specifications.
I didn't even see that, which is crazy because having the World Cup come to this country is like one of the biggest things ever since the Olympics. And he just refuses to modify his field.
John Sutcliffe, who covers soccer for ESPN, said Kroenke is refusing to pay for changes which require the removal of stands and luxury boxes. SoFi Stadium had been in the running to host the championship game, but it may not host any games at all now. Crazy. And by the way, if you don't have any World Cup games in the LA area, that's a massive failure on FIFA and obviously the World Cup's fault. Here's the thing. The Rose Bowl over there is like, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've hosted the 94 final and also the 99 final with for the 99ers, the Women's World Cup final.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and that's a big deal because across seas, you know, nobody cares about American football or barely, you know, but the World Cup has all eyes on it.
Yep.
And obviously Los Angeles is one of the biggest markets in the country, so you want to have games there, especially, like you said, potentially the finals match.
Yeah.
So it's like for an owner like Stan Kroenke to refuse to do something like that, this is a guy who's won championships. Some of his other teams have won championships, so it's kind of weird that he doesn't want to do what it takes as an owner to bring that sort of exposure to this area.
And especially a guy who is used to making lots and lots of money. It's stunning to me. By the way, apparently this is the same issue down in Las Vegas. They have played some soccer matches in Allegiant Stadium, but what I was told originally is they didn't build it wide enough. Why wouldn't you do this? As an NFL, you've got to be – who is advising these NFL owners? You're spending billions, I mean billions with a B, on the stadium. Why in the world would you not make it so you can host literally every event under the sun?
Yeah, you don't want to keep these stadiums to football exclusive because
they're having concerts in there.
As an owner, yeah, your goal is to make money.
Yeah.
So if you have the ability to rent it out and host these other events, why would you not do that?
That beats me. All right. Anyway, so that was a good list of technical fouls this week. All right. We will come back on the other side. We're going to be joined by Michelle Bodkin, typically sitting in the co-host chair across from me here. She is in Los Angeles getting ready for today's matchup between the 14th-ranked Utah Utes and the 18th-ranked USC Trojans. We'll get her feel for things down there in California coming up next right here on The Saturday Show.